Yep.
Well, it's 8 o'clock, so we're on time and ready to start our Empower Hour again. And we're finishing up the respiratory course, but be sure it's really important that to us that you ask any questions that you have about your animals. So post on the chat. And as we go through, of course, I know in the past you all have been posting vigorously to chat while I'm talking, and Dr. Jeff has been typing frantically to keep up. Doing a great job doing that. That's wonderful. So we are, anything you want to say before we start?
Nope. Just that we're going to try and put it all together tonight and go for holistic and homeopathy therapies. And then we'll dive deeper into a few of the topics and whatever you got. Whatever topics interest you the most, whichever diseases, we'll try to do a deeper dive into those as well.
So, and we have a special speaker next week. Do you want to speak right now for a minute, or do you want to do that at the end? Save it for the end.
Well, Dr. Lisa might pop in, so why don't we save it for now? Up, there you are. So I'm gonna.
Something is like.
Yeah, telling. I'm gonna mute everyone.
Okay.
For the time being.
Either that. I need to unmute me. There we go.
Yeah, you're.
It sounded like a very large dog was scratching. That's what it sounded like to me. Okay, let's share and stop the video and play. And there we go. And move this out of the way. There we go. Oh, that poor puppy dog. So we get to dig into the fun stuff today. So this is the last module of the respiratory course, and we're going to be looking at how we can really build the vitality and rebalance in animals so they can stay healthy. And as most of you who are on this call know, is that what we look at is the individual animal. And because every animal is different, and some have a disease resistant that is very, very strong just naturally, and others don't. Some need a lot of work to get to there, and others are just naturally there. We'll look at, as Dr. Jeff said, we'll do homeopathy, holistic, and especially important is to think about the progression of respiratory diseases, and we want to avoid that progression. As always, one of the most important things is to pay attention to the context of how an animal is doing overall, in spite of any symptoms they may be showing. And also, it could be that something you consider a symptom is something that's just completely normal, either because of the breed or because of the environment. So we'll definitely talk a little more about context. And we've talked, we know it's so important to embrace symptoms, to really know that symptoms are the language of the body. The way we know how well the resistance is going to be and how healthy our animals are is by paying attention to symptoms, especially the early warning signs, the beam symptoms. And also, it really guides us in setting our goal for step one of the holistic medical decision-making process. When we are looking at all the symptoms and looking at them in context, of course. The other thing that loving symptoms does I just love looking at these guys. The other thing is, when you aren't scared of symptoms, then you're much less likely to react and jump into doing stopping symptoms and using drugs or other approaches. You're more willing to allow symptoms to be there, and as long as the beam is good. Today we are going to be talking, we've talked a lot at the, I think it was module 2, about the specific symptoms that we see in respiratory conditions. Today we're going to be really focusing on, how do we look at those symptoms? How do we look for specifics that will help us determine the treatment that is needed for them? And how, you know, detectives, certainly good old Sherlock Holmes, is very precise and looks for very subtle clues to what might be going on. And that's what we need to do, is really be detectives. Most importantly with acute problems is you want to look for changes from the normal. You may have an animal that has always tended to cough or sneeze a little bit first thing in the morning, and now all of a sudden they're doing it later in the day. They're doing it 3 or 4 times a day. That's a change. It could be that they've never been sneezing, they're starting to sneeze, but also their behavior has changed and they've gotten fearful or timid. And of course, it's the quantifying symptoms is key for knowing in the future if you're moving in the right direction or you're not. And modalities, things that make each symptom better or worse, are key to individual and finding what is this animal telling us. So those symptoms are very important. And also, other symptoms going on in the body at the same time. It's difficult to find a great remedy when you're only looking at one body system. So it's important to look at the whole animal, as always. Now, particularly with the respiratory, in the respiratory area, we wonder sometimes, can we treat this with homeopathy? And one of the things many of us think about is how it'd be wonderful if we could get it out there in the media, in the social media, in the journals, how successful homeopathy can be in treating serious illnesses, bacterial, viral illnesses, even pneumonia. One of the leading human homeopaths, Dr. Andre Sain, said no patient needs to die from pneumonia. And most pets have an internal natural resistance, if you've been working with them to support that, it really prevents germs from causing respiratory problems. We talked earlier about this, how the nose has hairs and produces mucus, and the eyes will produce mucus, and even the cough is getting rid of foreign bodies that have come in, air particulate matter, smoke, things like that. Even things as big as foxtails. Although they can cause problems, there's a natural body system to get rid of those and to clean that out. And you can learn the homeopathic approaches that can help you with, particularly with acute problems, but that can help you help your veterinary homeopath even with chronic problems or more severe diseases. Now, if anybody, I know nobody right now this isn't true for, but if anybody listening to this is not familiar with homeopathy, I do recommend, since we're focusing so much on homeopathy, that if you want to learn more about the basics of homeopathy and some of the terminology we'll be using today, is to get the course and review the course that we did this June on vitality and balance using homeopathy. Now, one of the important parts of the respiratory systems, we've talked about the upper respiratory system and the lower respiratory system, and progression is what we want to prevent. We don't want those mild coughs and sneezes to develop into a deeper pneumonia. So I love this, keeping people healthy. Use your trap germs in your handkerchief. But instead of that, just imagine if that cartoon instead had little super people jumping up and down for each person, that there was like sitting on their shoulder, the way you have an angel sitting on people's shoulders, that they were jumping up and saying, build health, no germs if you build health. So it is important to allow the upper respiratory symptoms to, when they occur, to allow them to be there until you can naturally build the body's immunity so they resolve on their own, rather than getting rid of symptoms with artificial drugs or even with holistic approaches when you are not also addressing the underlying imbalance. Because for an example, a case I talked about last week, Isis, a Bengal cat, he was coughing from 8 weeks of age. And they tried a lot of conventional things to stop the cough. And it would sometimes stop. Luckily for the cat, his vital force was strong enough to continue with that cough. But he got weaker and weaker, so that when he was then vaccinated, which pushed him even more deeply into the pattern of illness that had started with an upper respiratory, he then went into a severe asthmatic attack. And we'll talk a little more about Isis later, but that shows how the progression, you really want to avoid that kind of progression. Now, we want to look at, again, the context of the respiratory symptoms. Does it even need to be treated? You know, if an animal, if a dog is having trouble breathing, maybe it's from the heat. Maybe it's from immediate overwork. We talked last week about, I think it was Yves's cat that was playing and for like 2 or 3 minutes and then would have respiratory problems in no other way except when they were playing with this one particular toy. And so we have to look at, has that been progressing? It hadn't been. This may be just normal for that cat to have a little bit of open mouth breathing. However, as you work to build health in general, paying attention to all symptoms, that one might then begin to resolve as well. It could be that your cat is sneezing and it was because she was outside and got into, maybe she started to sniff those beautiful yellow dandelions, or maybe you have a brachiocephalic dog or cat and this is a healthy, anatomically pretty good one, but maybe those nostrils, those little holes in the front, are so narrow that the difficulty in breathing, the dyspnea, is caused by that anatomy. Now, conventionally, of course, we would do surgery to open them up. Sometimes, even with holistic approaches, you may need to do that. But usually, even if it's an anatomical problem, by building the health, they can tolerate and put up with the symptom. And of course, we know that doing the surgery is not going to build vitality at all. Now we're going to look at the homeopathic approach for upper and lower respiratory problems. Mostly, we're going to look at it with upper. When they're more ill with lower respiratory, you may be working with a veterinary homeopath. And knowing everything you're learning today and that you've learned in the prior course will help you help your veterinary homeopath find the best possible remedy, giving it in the best possible way. So again, we've sort of talked about this before. We want to carefully observe and describe symptoms, especially the unusual ones, the individual ones, and not just the respiratory ones that we're concerned about now, but all symptoms. Put them in context with BEAM. Then we go to the index of symptoms and look them up. And then we look at the Materia Medica, the books about the homeopathic medicines, to after we've narrowed it down to a few that we're going to look up, between two and maybe seven or eight that we're going to look up, then we find which medicine matches our animal's symptoms the most closely. And one of your key things, as we mentioned before, are the modalities. So in this case, it could be you have a dog who sneezes when there's a thunderstorm. You could have a cat who has an asthmatic attack when the bright lights come on. You could have a dog or cat that only when there's bright lightning do they have any respiratory problems, maybe dyspnea. So modalities are really important. Now, so we're going to start, you know, just give a little bit of a background before we get started here with CHEERS. So we've talked about the repertory being an index of symptoms. There's also a variant of that repertory called a therapeutic repertory. And a therapeutic repertory is one that lists the disease and remedies that are known to help that disease, as opposed to the main repertory, which is purely based or mostly based on symptoms. And so we're going to be giving you a few remedies as we go through with these different scenarios, acute scenarios. We'll be giving you a few different remedies that we have had some success with. We'll also show you a few of the rubrics that you may see in the conventional repertories. The notes that you'll be getting are very extensive. Rather than simply reading repertory and Materia Medica today, we're going to start with cases and show how you would use this with your animals. So we're starting with CHEERS. And it was sort of tricky for me when I first saw this slide from Dr. Jeff. It said CHEERS and kennel cough. And I went, what? Why are we cheering kennel cough? And then I realized the dog's name was CHEERS. So this puppy is named CHEERS. And CHEERS symptoms was he retched a couple of times and had a white foam, sort of a coughing, retching, and some white foam came up, and looked at the context. The BEAM was great, and there had been a recent exposure to kennel cough during training. So first step is, do you need to immediately go to the veterinarian? BEAM is great, definitely don't need to go. So the therapeutic repertory has a few remedies in it. Now, there are thousands of cough remedies, hundreds of ones, and dozens that we might use. These are a few that we have found work quite well for kennel cough, but it does not mean these are the only ones to look at when you're thinking about kennel cough. But it's a good place to start. Now, if you go to the regular repertory, you can find stomach retching with cough. So the repertory is, each chapter of the repertory is organized by parts of the body. So one part is the stomach, and then they describe the symptoms. And so there's lots of remedies in here that you could be looking at. And some of these are in our list, but they might not all be in our list, because again, we're giving our particular experience of kennel cough. We're going to talk now about two of the homeopathic medicines that are list that are listed up here in the mini therapeutic repertory. So we're going to look at Drosera, which is made from a plant, and it has a most of these coughing remedies, most of these remedies, the coughs vary. And remember that you do not need all the symptoms of the remedy to be in your animal. You need the symptoms, the most characteristic symptoms of your animal have to be present in the materia medica of the homeopathic medicine. So it says hacking and retching cough. Okay, so that's a as opposed to a deep abdominal cough. It's not that one dog at one time is going to have both of those at the same time. And they may not have a violent spasmodic spell of a cough. If your cat or dog is having violent spasmodic spells of cough, then Drosera would be a remedy that could fit. Just that's a very important piece that we have to keep reviewing. It also, we talked about, Dr. Jeff, you're right there with a picture. Would you like to show them how to do an inducible cough on yourself?
Well, it's easy. Just rub the throat, and they may or may not go into a spasm, a coughing spasm, or cough at all. Usually, you have, in a normal animal, they have to press pretty hard to get any reaction. But if they have a tracheitis, and kennel cough is infectious tracheobronchitis, then the windpipe is already sensitized. So often they do have the inducible cough, and I just want to point out that Drosera, the reason Dr. Christine is mentioning it, it matches all the symptoms for sure, but it's also one of the, if not the most common kennel cough remedy that we use, if they have a retching cough.
And that doesn't mean that we're going to jump right to giving Drosera. We have to look again at what is this animal showing and what is the context of the symptoms. The inducible cough can sometimes be induced just by putting the collar on and taking them for a walk. Or they're a dog who's perfectly trained to go for the walk, never pulls, and then all of a sudden they pull just a little bit on the collar and you get the cough. Another medicine that was listed in the therapeutic materia medica and in the rubric for retching cough was aconite. Now we know, we've talked about aconite before, it has a sudden onset. It's one of the key remedies to think of early in a disease. So it also has an inducible cough. It has a dry cough. It's restless, thirsty, and particularly problems come on after they've been scared. It's a very post-traumatic disease remedy. It also after getting chilled or from a cold wind. So this dog, part of the context might be thinking about the exposure to kennel cough during training. What happened during that training session? Did something happen that scared the dog at the same time there was exposure to kennel cough? It could have been something you didn't even notice, but the dog acted really scared, even just for a short time. So that would be, you want to be thinking about what else was going on around that time. The treatment that was selected for this dog in looking at all of the symptoms was aconite, and they started with aconite. It was, they caught it very early. And so aconite is good early on. So they gave two doses, 12 hours apart, a little bit of throat soothing, and some rest, which makes sense. And the dog completely and quickly recovered. I remember seeing the email of that dog recovering. Now, one of the questions that you might want to be asking at this point is, This dog has coughed twice with a retching cough with white foam. Does it even need to be treated? So it's just a question to always be there. It's not because we have the wonderful homeopathy and flower essences, acupressure, other Reiki. That may be all you need to do would be to do Reiki on this dog. However, there was the exposure to kennel cough, and so it's certainly not going to hurt to give one or two doses of a homeopathic remedy. It's the if you give it for too long without paying attention where you can run into trouble. Okay, another problem. Here we are. Here's Archie. And so Archie's beam wasn't perfect. And actually, Dr. Jeff, what was off about his beam?
He just wasn't as boingy, as springy as usual. He didn't, he was sleeping, increased sleep, decreased energy, still food motivated, but not quite as usually supper time comes and he's jumping up and down and not his usual self.
And he did have a fever, as well as you'd have to decide at this point. The cough was once an hour, and it was moist. So, you might decide here, do we need to go to the vet and get some blood work done? Now, Dr. Jeff didn't have to do that question. He just decided, why not do some blood work? And so there was a high white count, which indicates that there is infection or inflammation at least.
Archie did go to the vet.
Oh, to another vet?
Yeah, I wanted to get a second opinion.
Okay. I'm taking my cat up to the vet to get blood drawn too. I'm going to another vet to do that because they've got the technicians to help hold my cat. I don't think I'd be very successful on my own here. So Archie did have a few things in terms of context, of course. He was slightly stressed, even though he was so happy to be in this wonderful, wonderful new household of the Feynmans with Jeff and Amy. He changed houses. He changed places. Maybe there were some allergies. He'd been exposed to other dogs. So there was some stuff going on that could have triggered this. So again, is it an emergency? Do you have to go to the vet? This is one that would be depending on how high the fever is. His beam was only down 25%. So you might be able to start treating it first. Treat for 24 hours, see what happened. If there was some improvement, continue. If there wasn't improvement, then you might think about going to the veterinary clinic. So for the canine influenza virus, here's a few of the homeopathic remedies that we might think about. And notice some of them are, there's an overlap in these different upper respiratory diseases for sure. So one of the things he had was mucus or pus in the eyes. So these are homeopathic remedies known to produce that in the provings or the testing, in poisonings, and in clinical practice to respond to that. There was also a loose cough during fever. And so one of the things you would do is look to see which of the remedies in this rubric and which of the remedies in this rubric are the same. And then you would add, if possible, rubrics from other parts of the body, like you could use generalities, fever, respiratory rate increased, lethargy. Reverse sneezing does not have a good rubric in Kent's repertory, so you wouldn't be able to use that directly. And so by looking at those, we looked at a couple of remedies. So one was belladonna. So belladonna characteristic is like aconite, that there's a sudden onset. And it's got this unusual high-pitched hoarseness to the throat, causing a high-pitched bark or meow because of the inflammation that's in the throat. If it's more down in the lungs, you'll see expectoration with a little bit of blood in it. They don't want to move, very much like the bryonia, although they don't get as angry at being jostled. They're a little more anxious, although they can be aggressive. They've got these dilated pupils, and they do definitely have fever. Now, pulsatilla, which was also in both of those rubrics that we looked at, has a tendency to have much more bland discharges wherever it is. They can be yellow or green, but they're non-irritating, not smelly. They're just not very noxious. They're innocuous. And they do better when they're outdoors. In general, pulsatillas are better from consolation. I had asked you that earlier, Dr. Jeff. Was he better from consolation? Yeah. Like all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, Judy, can you answer that? This is like, ever not like upping? Yeah, he was.
So that's another, you know, looking at who they are. But again, you're more looking at changes. Because he's always been that way, you wouldn't put as much emphasis on better from consolation. Now, if it really makes the symptom better, then you can put a little more emphasis on it. If it's just that he wants to hang out with you and be clingy, and that's not different than before, then you wouldn't pay as much attention to it. Make sure that makes sense to you. If that's not clear, say something in the chat, because that's really important in the mental emotional states of animals when we're looking at them. Pulsatilla likes to have its head elevated, or they feel better when they're actually sitting up rather than lying down. And pulsatilla is a keynote of it is changeable symptoms. So you could have a cough for a day and then have sneezing and a nose discharge for a day. You could have a cough that was really dry and then it got really wet and then it got really dry again. So Dr. Jeff chose pulsatilla to start with. He gave it 200C, and he did something that's called coupage. And we'll talk more about this in some of the deeper dives. Coupage is basically playing gorilla ape man on your dog. So it's going, and pounding gently on their chest. And that's to loosen up any of the mucus that may be stuck in there. And now, Dr. Jeff why don't you go ahead and tell us what happened after the pulsatilla and why did you follow it with sulfur, which is also in those rubrics?
Okay. After the pulsatilla, it definitely improved. There was less discharge, less reverse sneezing. Actually, we did repeat the pulsatilla. It didn't have any effect. And what symptom guided me to sulfur? I think it wasn't on the slide. It was a telling a sulfur symptom of heat intolerance. So it became very, very, very hot, hotter than usual. And I know, Judy, that's hard to believe since he's panting all the time, but yeah, he couldn't even tolerate being in a 75-degree room.
Don't you find that to be true for pulsatilla as well, though?
It is.
And however, the key thing is Dr. Jeff said he repeated the pulsatilla and it had no effect. So then you're looking for other remedies that have that characteristic symptom, as well as pulsatilla did help. So then you're looking in the repertory, and we talked about this in that June course, then you're looking in the repertory in the section of, or in a separate book, of relationship of remedies. And you look to pulsatilla and you see what are the medicines that are known to complete the action, that are known if pulsatilla works, what are a few of the medicines, and there's usually only, you know, 10 or 20 at the most there, that seem to help. One remedy works, then look at these. And then if those remedies, it'd be like another rubric that you're using. You're looking at these remedies. And again, doesn't mean that you have to always follow the remedy with another.
it just, look at that, Dr. Jeff. Did you see what came up on the slide?
Yep. I think somebody drew that on there.
Not me. I wasn't even touching the computer. Very interesting. Okay. So now we're going to move on to our third acute, which is some kitty cats. So I don't know which cat Rosie was here, but Rosie is one of these kitty cats. Oh, you were able. Now it's on all the slides.
It was on the other one. Yep. If you want to get rid of it, you can just erase it.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm sorry, you were pointing to which one was Rosie?
Your cursor was to the second from the left.
Oh, this one.
That one, yeah.
Okay. Now, interesting, was she sick at that time when that picture was taken?
She wasn't, actually.
Oh, okay.
After recovery when she was less skittery.
Because it's interesting that these cats are all sort of up and big, and she's sort of small, and but it could just be the moment the picture was taken. Be careful how you interpret things. And here's a good example of interpretation. So her beam was she runs and hides. Well, I wonder why. She was recently trapped from a feral cat colony. So feral cats recently trapped tend to run and hide. So is she running and hiding because that's a change in her personality along with the constant sneezing? Or is she running and hiding because she's a feral cat? Or is she running and hiding because that's just her natural behavior? You don't know at this point. So we have constant sneezing. We have a yellowish to green discharge in both eyes that if they weren't being cleaned, I mean, it's pretty wonderful with this feral cat who's running and hiding to be able to clean them out. One of the questions that you'd want to note is what happens like in the morning when the discharge hasn't been cleaned during the night? Does it agglutinate the eyes shut? Do they get stuck shut? There's actually a rubric called agglutination. So these were the symptoms we had. And what are we going to do with that? So we're going to look first at a therapeutic materia medica, at a few remedies. Then we'll move to, in Kent's repertory, constant sneezing, eye discharge of mucus or pus, eye discharge is yellow. In Kent, there is not a rubric for eye discharge is green. There's nose discharge green, but not eye discharge green. Again, you look to see what are the medicines that are common in these three rubrics and any other rubrics, if she had any. But again, everything is open to interpretation. If the hair coat wasn't very good, this is a rescued feral cat. So can you say dry hair coat? You wouldn't use dry hair coat because you don't know if that's a vital force imbalance or poor diet. So a couple of remedies that showed up there. One was Mercurius. Mercurius has really yucky stuff. Is one of the ways to think about mercury. They've got discharges. When they have diarrhea, they're going constantly across the yard. They're squatting, squatting, squatting. It's like sort of severe. So this cat is constantly sneezing. So it sort of fits that severity. The eyelids are spasming, squinting eyes, ulcerative lesions. And they're called the human thermometer because they don't like to be too cold and they don't like to be too warm. Now, that's going to be hard to tell with this cat. Even if the cat was in isolation and on its own and you had a heating pad, was she not using the heating pad because it was too close to noise to the front of the cage or because she didn't want to be too warm? But with other animals, you'll be able to... ones that aren't brand new into a rescue, you can use that symptom. Another possibility that was in those rubrics was arsenicum, common remedy for cats with upper respiratory problems. Again, it does tend to have that acrid discharge like mercury does, where it makes the tissue raw where the discharge is. And the eyelids red, swollen, and we know about the generals of arsenicum of being chilly, restless, and fastidious. So they chose Mercurius and gave a 30C, which is what they had. And again, how do you give it to a feral cat? In the food. Oh, but you can't give homeopathic remedies in food. Oh, yes, you can. They work wonderfully that way. Cage rest, isolation to protect from the other cats, vitamin C, just making sure she was getting enough fluids. So it could have done Reiki, because that can be done long distance, could have used rescue remedy or some flower essences if needed, but that wasn't needed. That was all that was needed for that kitty. Now, just very briefly, I'm going to finish up with Isis. To show, we've talked about the progression for Isis. It went from just this sort of hairball coffee cough to acute asthma with swollen lips, blue lips, blue mucous membranes, being on oxygen, being put on heavy-duty asthma drugs, and the quality of life was horrible. This cat was lethargic and not bright. Isis, a Bengal cat, very outgoing normally, you know, became a little more reclusive, just not happy. When I started treating Isis, I looked at how the cough was when it first started, and it happened to be mostly in the early morning on waking. And this man was an older man, and he woke up very early, like about 4 o'clock. And the homeopathic remedy Thuja has coughing in that early morning time period, 3 to 4. And particularly, it is one of the remedies for asthma after vaccination in Kent's repertory. And I used Thuja, so we were on a lot of medications. We started with the Thuja, did not stop the medications. You don't have to stop meds before you do homeopathy. Here's a cat that's not coughing and is not and has low energy level. We give the homeopathic remedy and the energy level goes up a few days later. And so when the energy level goes up, we decrease the medications by 25%. A few days later, the cough starts again. Rather than increasing the meds, we give more. You give another dose of Thuja. The cough stops. The cat feels even better. So we decrease the meds again. After a month, this cat, who anytime he'd tried to take him off meds before would end up in an oxygen cage, this cat was now off all medications. And that was a 30C. And then the next time he coughed, because he was off of medications now, we gave a 200C. And he went on to live another 13 years. Had very few other problems. A rodent ulcer at one point, and I think some itchy skin at another point. But he did great. So you can treat the chronic diseases. It just takes... you know, when it's progressed into something with drugs like that, you want to be working with a veterinary homeopath for sure. There are no cookbook treatments, as we've been saying over and over, either in homeopathy that we've talked about or with the holistic actions you can take at home. Totally safe, 100% safe, flower essences, Reiki, massage, acupressure, nutritional supplements, herbal supplements, and we have a fairly comprehensive section on that in the notes that you'll be getting. Before you send them out, Dr. Jeff, I have to finish up the flower essences. So in summary of this entire course of all 5 modules is take a step back and don't be afraid. Look at everything that's going on with an open mind, particularly the context of the symptoms. Describe the symptoms in detail, regardless of what treatment you're going to use, because that's how you can evaluate the treatment response. And make sure that you're building health working to treat the underlying imbalance and not just merely getting rid of symptoms. All right, that's it for this course. Okay. Open her up. How are we question-wise here? Got a lot of chats, a lot in the chat room.
Yeah, just some general discussion. Let me unmute everyone. So anyone can jump in. We've got time for any of your questions.
Is Archie better now?
He was better.
Oh, what?
He goes up and down. His body is working through a lot.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Yeah. But he's perfect. Thanks for asking.
Good. Of course he is.
So any respiratory cases anyone have?
Or any, it doesn't even have to be respiratory. If you have any questions about your health.
Start there and then we'll work. Yeah, Abby, has Bernie had any breathing issues at all?
No breathing issues. So he got his rabies a couple weeks ago, and I've been monitoring pretty closely, and nothing has changed really that I've noticed, which is good. He does sometimes have like a clear drip from his nose, which made me think of the arsenicum that you were talking about, because that's also fear. Sometimes he's like fearful as well. So I was wondering if that might be something.
Too ripe?
Yeah.
But I didn't want
to. Let's throw it out then.
Sorry about that.
Yep. Well, I think, it's back to that question we asked at the beginning with the kennel cough dog who had coughed twice. Is it something that actually does need to be treated? A little bit of a clear dripping from the nose can definitely be environmental. It doesn't need to be necessarily treated. It's something I would be watching. Mm-hmm. And the fearfulness, the anxiety that's there with arsenicum, again, we're looking for changes. So did it get worse after the rabies vaccine?
It's same. Like everything, any of his like semi kind of symptomy things are the same. So, and like it's when I take him for hikes a lot of time, he's smelling everything. So that's when that's happening. So I figured it's just him going crazy smelling things.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And then what you want to do, we talked a little bit about this, I think, last time, is with the slight fearfulness that's going on, rather than jumping in to treat it necessarily with homeopathy, because there's dozens of remedies that have that characteristic and have watery nasal discharge, it would be to see, is it escalating? Is it getting worse? Mm-hmm. Is it generalizing? So there's more fear in general, or is it getting less fear in general, but maybe one or two things there's a fear about. So it's more to watch and observe. Mm-hmm. And only if it's escalating, then do you want to come in and treat it. Or you have that as a background when there are other symptoms that do need to be treated, then you would use that, especially if it got worse when those symptoms appear. Make sense?
Yeah, nothing's gotten worse. It's honestly just like when it's introduced to something new, that he'll be fearful of something new. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And then if he has like some positive things surrounding it next time, then the fear possibly goes away. So
perfect.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've run into over the last 37 years is that a lot of us have a mindset of how the perfect dog or cat is. And just like there's no perfect kid, well, mine of course was, but there's some dogs are just naturally a little timid. Mm-hmm. I use it with horses. Like if you have a horse that tends to shy occasionally at something new, that's normal. If you have a horse that only an expert rider can ride because they shy so much, that needs to be treated. So that's sort of the distinction. So very good. You know, you were very observing very well.
Thank you. Good job.
I just want to add one other thing, which is, you know, the reason we do these courses is so you can learn about the way the body works and the healing of the body. You know, after a stress of any kind, Abby, like a rabies vaccine, you know, its body is doing everything it can to regain that equilibrium or any equilibrium that was lost from the toxins in the vaccine. And one of the ways it can do that is with a clear discharge. Mm-hmm. So that might have just been his body reacting in a totally appropriate way to an external stressor. But because everything you said to Dr. Christina, everything was the same and that just, you know, went away, then didn't even need to treat it just like you did.
I did have one more question about it, though. The one thing I have noticed is has had a few more ticks on him than normal recently, and they're like really, really tiny ticks. And I don't know if that's just a seasonal thing or if like somehow his immune system being weakened a little bit by a rabies shot is allowing him to be more vulnerable to have ticks on him. Is that a possibility?
I bet Dr. Jeff and I have different ideas here. I basically have found that health doesn't affect whether they get ticks or not. What health affects is, do the ticks cause any damage to them? And I would say it's environmental. Dr. Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, and I would say that it's a combination of both, which is kind of what you said, but it is seasonal, Abby. In this area, I don't know about you're down south a little bit, but up here,
we have a lot of ticks.
We're in a really bad time right now, you know, probably for the next six weeks. But yeah, certainly there could be some minor energy shifts.
You might want to try the shoe tag.
What is it?
It's called shoe tag. And it's a minor, it like puts out this little tiny vibration that keeps away ticks. And they have them for fleas, ticks, mosquitoes. They're for people, dogs, cats.
Okay.
And now they're called Zero Bug Zone. Right. They renamed them, yeah.
But you can find it either way.
And I only know because I just saw Archie's that he was wearing when he took his collar off.
Excellent. Christine was asking about irritated pads and feet after hiking. And I was just wondering if that had always been going on. Oh, let's see. Here we go. But these are after pretty intense, very rocky hikes. Boy, I would probably rub the pads with like a Hypericum calendula cream or bag balm. Bag balm is just great for sore things. Now, of course, that's going to get walked all over your house. So you may want to do it while you're sitting out on the porch first. But you could use the calendula hypericum gel, and I think once that dries it wouldn't be walking all over your house.
Now my question is, are they visually irritated? So he's licking, but are they, are the pads red or swollen, or is there anything there? And
nope. I have a question. It's Nicole, if you can hear me. Mm-hmm. So there's a trend going on here in New York, because we're talking about paws. And there's no reason, there's no rain, there's no snow, but they're putting those little blue things around the paws. Can you hear what I'm saying?
Can you speak up? It's almost here in New York, they're putting out something.
On dogs' paws, they're using those balloon kind of shoes that you would use maybe in the winter. Someone said you moved like into a background music. That's probably why you can't hear me. It's a background. Anyway, so they're putting them on. Don't dogs breathe through their paws? Like, do they breathe through their paws? Like, do they, whether it's sweat or, isn't it important?
Okay, dogs do sweat through their feet, but they do not breathe through their feet.
Sweat is the best word. Yeah.
Right. They breathe through their mouth. They sweat through their feet. But anything you put, a lot of dogs have to wear booties, especially working dogs that are tracking and rescue dogs, that sort of thing. They wear booties on a regular basis. And it does not cause a problem. It doesn't stop the sweating that they need to do.
So what I was saying is that there's no reason, but in New York, they're putting those balloons around their paws right now, probably because it's just easier for them. They don't need to clean their feet. But it annoys me because I know they need to sweat, let's call it, instead of breathing through it. It's just become a new trend that I just don't believe in.
That's it. It shouldn't be a problem for them. It might be, is it setting you off just because it's, it looks annoying or
they're lazy,
not natural.
They're lazy and it's not natural,
In a way, I agree with you in terms of if a dog never was allowed to have his feet in the earth and touching the ground, if they always had shoes on, just like with people, we shouldn't always have shoes on. We should be barefoot. I actually headed to the dentist this morning and I'd been loading my car in bare feet. And I got to the dentist's office and realized I didn't have any shoes with me. Luckily it didn't matter. But
when I go to Massachusetts, I have barefoot all the time. It feels great. Yeah.
So I could, that would be a concern for me if a dog never had his feet on like that. However, the toxic chemicals that are around in New York City, I could see needing to protect the feet, especially in the winter, if it's really muddy and maybe people are using something to help clean the streets, that would be the concern. So I don't think it's a problem to use them. I think the problem for me would be using them 100% of the time.
Right. Got it. Thank you.
And both you and Christine can use something called Musher Secret, which is just a gel type emollient that you can put over the pads that actually protects, it's designed to protect the sled dog feet from getting cut up when they're mushing.
Right.
And it certainly can help protect the feet for dogs walking in the city in the middle of, if there's a lot of rock salt put out or, other things that can irritate the feet, which is why Christina might also help your pup that's getting his feet cut up after a hike.
And then Robin asked a question early on that I'll just briefly address. How do you know how long to wait before changing remedies? Basically, when you've repeated, it depends on the acuteness of the situation. If you have a bitch who's delivering puppies and having trouble and you're giving a remedy every 2 or 3 minutes and after 10 minutes, there's no improvement, then you change remedies. If you have a dog who's been scratching for 10 years and you're working on that, scratching for a year and you're working on that, then you may stick with a remedy for weeks or even a month or more. Basically, when no further changes are happening and you've gone up in potency or frequency or quantity and nothing is getting better, and nothing's changing, then at that point, you would think about changing remedies.
Okay.
And it's about that time.
It's about that time. We've got a few minutes. One minute left. Yep. Any other pressing questions or updates?
Can I ask a quick question? My 11-month-old puppy has recently started burping. I mean, she's not uncomfortable. It's after eating, but she levitates. I'm talking big belches. But the other three dogs are eating the same things. There haven't been any changes in diet. Is there something I can do to
probiotics?
Okay.
I would start with probiotics. If you're already doing them, double them.
Okay.
Every dog's an individual, so each one has, you know, unique digestive issues and can change because of some stressor we're not aware of. The other thing, if it persists, that you might want to think about would be the animal biome, where they have the feces in capsules now. So you can do MBRT.
I have microbiome, right? That's okay. Part of therapy, yep. But is it a new diet? I really said more. You said that they all eat the same thing, but is it a new source or a new?
No, there haven't really been any changes in the diet.
And no new treats.
No new treats.
Yep. So they're violent, but they loud burps.
Yes. But she's not uncomfortable. You know, she just lets them out, lets them fly, whatever. Yep.
So keep track of that in your journal.
Right.
Yes.
Important. A significant symptom.
And does anybody know the word that's used in the repertory for burping?
No.
Eructation.
Oh, I'm going to write that down.
And I love when I'm teaching and somebody says, what's eructation? Because I get to go. Do it on call.
Yeah, not nice. I agree with Nicole.
I'm glad you
good.
Yep, I love doing that. Okay, so
we are out of time, and yep, and you asked me at the beginning, and now we don't have time. But next week is human physician, indie homeopath, talking to us about urinary tract infections in people or treating them in people as acute. Before the session, I'll resend the acute cystitis clinical scenario that we went over a while ago, and you'll see how similar the remedies and the approach are. But we're very, very excited to have her. So we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.